Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Fitness and finance. Oh my gosh, the metaphors, the examples, they just write themselves here. There is a lot to connect those two worlds, according to my next guest. Anthony Delani is the founder and author of the Owning the Dash series of books. From the world of fitness, the Owning the Dash philosophy means taking advantage of every opportunity to make smart decisions now to ensure a healthy and happy future. I should put air quotes around that. Anthony uses this philosophy to help families make sense of personal finances. And he joins us now from Cary, North Carolina, to tell us more. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Thank you so much for having me.
Owning the dash. Are we talking about dash as in sprint or dash as in punctuation?
Dash as in on your tombstone, between your birth and death dates.
Oh, yes. Okay. Tell me more about where your cousin Greg and where this came from and how it fits to money.
Absolutely. I've been in the financial services industry for the past 20 years. And back in 2015, I had a cousin. His name was Greg Plitt, P-L-I-T-T. And Greg was very famous in the fitness world. He was on the cover of over 200 fitness magazines. Just an incredible person. And he had a website where he people would email in questions on life and fitness, and he would do video blogs to answer those questions. And unfortunately, he passed away in 2015 unexpectedly. But to try to remember my cousin, I started watching these videos in more depth, and I realized that a lot of his philosophies, as they applied to fitness, could also apply to the world of finance. And to the title of the book, Owning the Dash, one of his videos was on just the concept of death and really trying to make use of all the time that you have on this world. And it just really struck me, and I built an entire organization off of it. Just the importance of mindset as it relates to fitness, to finance, to life in general. So that's why my way of serving as a testimonial to Greg and helping families.
What an incredible legacy to him. Sounds like he was an extraordinary human. Let's ask first then about mindset. So what is the single most important thing you would say about how to have, I don't know how you'd frame it, an empowering mindset, a positive mindset, a mindset that has you take the actions you need to take to get a handle on your money?
I think it's being honest with yourself. I think that a lot of times we have things in the back of our minds, and we tend to plan things in our minds. We tend to think about things, but we don't actually act on them. And I think that part of the reason we don't act is we somehow convince ourselves that I'll deal with that later. One thing I actually wrote in the book is just this idea of the word tomorrow and even the word family. They can be very powerful things, but they can also be great excuses on I'll deal with that tomorrow. I'll figure this out later. Taking ownership of changing that deal with this tomorrow to I'm going to address this now. I'm going to educate myself now. And even if I don't like the result of what I find, I'm still at least going to have the knowledge behind me to know how to move forward. So
you have a number of tools in this book, and one is something that I've been talking about for years, the net worth statement, but you add your own spin, and I think the spin is really interesting. So net worth, what you own minus what you owe, got it, it's the assets, you know, your house, your car, whatever, minus your liabilities, your mortgage, your car loan, credit card debt, whatever. You add two elements, rate of return and purpose. Tell me about those two elements.
Absolutely. A lot of times we kind of think of our assets as everything being in the same category. So for example, for investments, some individuals might say that I'm a conservative person or I'm an aggressive person or whatever it might be. And the reality is that every account you have should have a purpose to it. And when you actually identify its purpose, it's much easier to identify how that account should be allocated, what it should be in. For money that's for our retirement that might be 10 years down the road, we can take more risk than for, say, a new home purchase in the next year or something of that nature. So when you can not only identify all the accounts you have, but also what purpose they go to, it makes it much easier to kind of know why you're using that account. Also, it makes it easier to avoid tapping into that account if you know it's dedicated toward a set goal already.
And rate of return, is this target or actual?
So rate of return goes to the idea of once you know what the purpose of the account is, then you want to identify, is it allocated in alignment with that goal? So going back to the idea of retirement, if retirement's going to be 10 plus years, and I have my IRA sitting in a checking account or in a CD that's yielding in this environment less than 1%, does that make a lot of sense to have right now? Or should I be making sure that the investments that I have are geared towards the time horizon associated with them?
Cash flow is another thing that you get into great detail here, but in a bit of a different way, in that you categorize cash flow differently. Primary committed, secondary committed. You're not talking about relationships, you're talking about money. Explain your methodology there.
I work very heavily with families, and cash flow can just go all over the place. There's no such thing as a kind of here's just the way it is. But there are ways we can identify certain parts of our cash flow with the committed expenses, like a rent or a mortgage, the utility bills, the phone bill, and then, of course, the discretionary types of expenses. But I think the most important thing that I've discovered personally and professionally when it comes to cash flow is that I like to look at what's called the top-down approach to a cash flow versus a bottom-up. And what I mean by that is that the bottom-up approach means I'm trying to identify every expense I have and pinpoint where the money's going. Whereas the top-down is saying, this is the budget that I'm giving myself, and this is the amount I plan to save. This is the amount that I plan to put towards vacations or this or that or the other. And basically making sure that the priorities happen first, and then the money that's for the discretionary, the going out to eat, the whatever it might be, that is separated out into its own account so that if that account starts getting low, then you know very quickly, I'm exceeding the budget I set for myself. Mm-hmm. My wife and I've been an advisor ever since I graduated college. And my wife and I used to have difficulty with figuring out how are we going to pay for the vacation, or how are we going to pay for this big expense coming up, because all of the money went into one checking account and that checking account was used to cover everything. So what we did is we came up with a game plan of creating separate buckets or accounts where money would go into that was set for different purposes. So once again, going back to purpose behind everything you do. So one account was there for the everyday spending, but then there was another account for vacations or the large miscellaneous items. And finally, there was another account for the savings for the future, making sure that if we set a certain amount that we wanted to save for particular goals, we were actually making sure that was happening.
What are some ways that families can prepare for uncertainty? Not necessarily the worst case scenarios, like of course you need insurance of many different types, but other what if situations that are commonplace these days.
Yeah, a lot of uncertainty these days, unfortunately. What I would share is that a running theme that I encourage with all families is the idea of flexibility. Flexibility is really key because things are just always evolving with everybody's life, but definitely in a family dynamic. And when it comes to investing in various accounts, it's really important to understand the limitations and the flexibility associated with those accounts. So for example, like 401ks and work retirement plans, even a Roth 401k, you can't really tap into that account until the retirement years, where something like a Roth IRA, the principal in that account, you can get access to if there was an emergency. So while we don't have a ton of money sitting in a checking account that's yielding less than 0.25%, if we have investments or savings for the future that is flexible, that is able to be more easily able to be get access to, it just gives that peace of mind of knowing if something comes up, we're not ready for it. We have ways to adjust accordingly.
Anthony, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Anthony Delani, the founder and author of the Owning the Dash books. He joined us from Cary, North Carolina, which is why he mentioned the Roth IRA. The translation, Canadians, you know, talk about RRSPs and LIRAs and stuff like that, but same fundamental message.